Welcome to the CCF Podcast. We're a campus ministry at Truman State University. This podcast features sermons from our weekly worship services. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back. We're closing in on the end. It is 1 Corinthians time. First, a preface. That red-tailed hawk, I was not sure what to do with this chapter. Much of 1 Corinthians, as you know by now, is about very culture and that church-specific kinds of things. Meat sacrifice to idols, head coverings, etc. And there's a certain approach that's right for stuff like that, that involves breaking things down and looking at parts, and contextualizing, teaching. But then Paul reaches 1 Corinthians 13. And if you just read it straight through, this section will just suddenly, you're like, whoa. Smack in the middle of instructions about speaking in tongues and prophesying. And everything takes a hard turn straight up into this hymn about love that is like cosmic and universal and stuff. And it speaks for itself right now, today, as smoothly as it could at any time in history. How does someone speak on that? Why speak on it at all? Why not just let it speak for itself? This passage is like a red-tailed hawk. It is soaring. We are watching it. The whole thing is full of awe and wonder. And I'm afraid that the tendency of many preachers would be to snare it and yank it to the ground and cut it open, dissect it for you to see all the organs. The Greek word for love is, we all understand it better, but we kill it in the process. I don't want to do that. I recently saw the poet Christian Wyman at the Festival of Faith and Writing with Derek. That experience, a red-tailed hawk all of its own. And Wyman recently wrote a book called Zero at the Bone, 50 Entries Against Despair, which is this seemingly disparate collection of things, poems, essays, a sermon, quotes, memoir. And they don't have any apparent order, but nevertheless, they all have something to do with beating back despair. And at the festival, Wyman talked about how he doesn't always experience his life as like a neat, linear unfolding of discrete events, that sometimes it's much more this like havoc and storm. And he wanted the very form of his book, Against Despair, to reflect that. And so I wanted to take something like that approach with this chapter, because my experience of it and of the love of which it speaks, they don't, for me, yield very easily to like a smooth step-by-step three-point outline. So why try to teach it that way? So we're going to do this instead. Here it is. This is chesed. It's the Hebrew word for steadfast love or compassion. Chesed. 9 entries for love. Number 1, would you stand with me for the text? 1 Corinthians 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. But where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part, but when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Sorry, I'm going to switch and do this our normal translation. This is NIV. ESV. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. Please be seated. Two, three stories about love. The first stage is to believe that there is only one kind of love. The middle stage is to believe that there are many kinds of love, and that the Greeks had a different word for each of them. The last stage is to believe that there is only one kind of love. Freddie B. I was born in 1984. When I was a boy, 4 or 5 years old, my mom used to carry me. One of the bedrock experiences of my early childhood was of her voice. Not her words, mind, but her voice. When I got tired and heavy, like children do when their parents talk too long in the church lobby, she would pick me up and I would wrap my arms around her neck and press my ear up against her chest. She would carry on her conversations with whoever about whatever, it didn't matter to me. And her voice would reach me not by vibrations through the air, but through the body. It was direct. Like the difference between static electricity and grabbing a live wire. It was like hearing a voice underwater or from within the womb. It came from everywhere and right here. And I felt it as much as I heard it, and it comforted me. This was the first time I knew love. It is the love that we take. I graduated high school in 2002. That summer, as these summers are, was a sort of mini eternity, timeless, paradisiacal, like paradise. With high school finally over and college yet to begin, it was 3 glorious months of life without commitment. Anything could happen at any time. And those late summer nights just went on forever in the best way. Leanne and I had only just started dating. It was chemical, alchemical, magnetic. The thrill of jumping that synapse between our hands when they rested close together. We drove endlessly, listening to Let Down by Radiohead, with the sunroof open and the windows down, to be nowhere but together. This was the second time that I knew love. It is the love that we share. Graham Frederick William Dent was born in 2014, the youngest of our 3 boys. He is the only one still left firmly in the world of childhood. Adolescence has not happened to him yet, which means that he will still curl up and insist, keep reading for as long as I can handle it. And it also means that the darkness still has a concreteness for him, a presence in the stillness of the dark house in the middle of the night is for him like an entirely different dimension than the daytime, one that is full of threats. Are they imagined? Sure, but imagined is real at this age. Which means that, among many other things, our ability to sleep is entwined. And his heart stakes a claim, many claims, on my freedom at all hours of the day and night. This is the third time that I knew love. It is the love that we give. So there is the love we take, the love we share, and the love we give. And we're told by C.S. Lewis and pastors everywhere that there are different Greek words for these, and that is true. but it makes us think that these are three distinct things, and that is not true. Buechner, again, these are all varied manifestations of a single reality. To lose yourself in another's arms or in another's company or in suffering for all who suffer, including the ones who inflict suffering upon you, to lose yourself in such ways is to find yourself, is what it's all about, is what love is. Of all powers, love is the most powerful and the most powerless. It is the most powerful because it alone can conquer that final and most impregnable stronghold that is the human heart. It is the most powerless because it can do nothing except by consent. To say that love is God is romantic idealism. To say that God is love is either the last straw or the ultimate truth. Three, a consummate experience. I do weddings from time to time. Weddings are natural times for talking about love. And 1 Corinthians 13 is a hallmark wedding verse. Have you ever heard it at a wedding before? The rest of you probably haven't been to a wedding. During a homily for one wedding, I read this passage from Tim Keller. When over the years someone has seen you at your worst and knows you with all your strengths and flaws, yet commits him or herself to you wholly, it is a consummate experience. To be loved but not known is comforting but superficial. To be known and not loved is our greatest fear. But to be fully known and truly loved is, well, a lot like being loved by God. It is what we need more than anything. It liberates us from pretense, humbles us out of our self-righteousness, and fortifies us for any difficulty life can throw at us. As children, we are the objects of our parents' love, but we do not know it. As we get older, we become aware of ourselves as the objects of someone else's love, and a fear is introduced. If they really knew me, they wouldn't love me. We become convinced that we must make a choice. They can either know me for who I really am, or they can love me, but not both. It is a lie. The wife from that wedding had something to hide, and she hid it. She would not be known, so she could not be loved. He could not give it, and she could not receive it. The marriage didn't make it. Four, Isaiah 54:10. Though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. Five, a maggot in a wound. If I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil but rejoices with the truth. Love is not proud. It doesn't dishonor others, is not self-seeking, is not easily angered. But I am proud, the kind of proud that manifests in insecurity. I'm tempted to fear that my own place in the community is at stake whenever people tell me how great Derek or Leanne or Marty is, which is silly because I, more than anyone, know their greatness and think more than anyone that they are great. And I am petty. I say things under my breath or sometimes over my breath when parents complain about the youth soccer team that I coach. And I am impatient and I am angry. I have at times flipped a switch and boiled over at my boys so suddenly that I hardly knew it was happening, almost like I was standing outside myself, watching it along with them, saddened and confused and horrified at how I could speak to my children in such a way, whom I love so much. But I guess I have to ask, do I love them so much? That's my point. If love is not proud or dishonoring or easily angered, but I am, then do I not have love? And am I nothing? And can I only be something, only be a conduit for God's love once I have already gotten rid of my pride and my pettiness and my impatience and my anger? And if so, how can I possibly do that? Especially without love. I do not know how. I think some of us have thought of God's love like this, that we must somehow get rid of our unloveliness so that we can then be worthy to give and receive God's love. But that seems to me like asking a seed to become a tree before you will give it water. That's not what God's love is like. So let me tell you a story about physical therapy. My mother-in-law, Patty, worked as a physical therapist specializing in wound care at St. Luke's Hospital on the Plaza in Kansas City for 25 years. Once, she had an outpatient man with an open wound on his leg, which she cleaned and bandaged before giving him instructions to regularly do likewise at home until he came back for his next appointment. 2 weeks later, he had returned. 2 weeks later, he returned. He had not changed his bandages once the whole time he was away. When Patty carefully peeled back his bandages and started to massage the tissue around the edge of the wound, she noticed that the skin started to sort of undulate, a little bubbling motion up and down. And then, suddenly, out from the open part of the wound came maggots. Patty was brave and strong and held back the revulsion from her face and squashed down that involuntary wretch that wanted to escape from her. But she said that the most curious thing happened. Once she had removed the maggots from the wound, she noticed it was immaculately clean. And so now, here is a new sentence for you. The love of God is a maggot in a wound. God's love doesn't wait around for the wound to become clean so that it can move in. It is the life, that sometimes grubby, at first repulsive, slow-working, not-what-we'd-ask-for life, eating up the dead things from the inside out. God's love isn't waiting for us to become patient and humble so that it can work through us. It is the very thing working through us to eat up our impatience and our pride. And while, yes, I do believe that sooner or later we must learn to cooperate with the work of God and become partners in our own process of becoming whole, I also see, looking back, that sometimes God's love has a way of sneaking in and doing work despite my best efforts to keep my bandages unchanged. 6. Kareem MJ LeBron. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Keith already knew where I was going with this. And now these three remain: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. This is a well-known verse. I bet you've heard it before. And I always thought of it as a list of distinct but related things being compared for their value. Like Kareem MJ and LeBron abide, but the greatest of these is LeBron. Faith and hope are very good, but if you had to pick one, I thought Paul was saying, love is the goat. Put that in your campus Christian quotes. But then on Monday, I was reading this on Monday, and I noticed that faith, hope, and love have already shown up together in this passage a few verses earlier, and their relationship isn't quite like that. Love always protects, always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Now, this word in verse 7, trusts, love always trusts in Greek, that's the same word as faith in verse 13. So you might translate it as love always faiths as a verb, or love always has faith. And then, of course, love always hopes. So faith and hope and love aren't separate entities to be weighed against each other like famous basketball players. Faith and hope are verbs that love does and is. The relationship of faith and hope to love is less like that of Kareem and MJ to LeBron and more like that of a wave and a tide to an ocean. An ocean is greater than a wave or a tide, but not because it's better than a wave or a tide. You wouldn't pick a wave instead of the ocean because you couldn't. The wave and the tide, they're like functions, they're arrangements of the ocean's water. No ocean, no wave, no tide. Nowhere are we told that God is faith or that God is hope. But we do know that God is love. So to have faith isn't to, like, circle strongly agree on a survey of certain facts about God. It is to act in the love of Christ, to live in step with the ways of God because you trust that the love of God is what is right and real and true. Faith is a function of love. To hope is to insist, either internally or out loud, that your faith is leading somewhere that God has prepared, that in the end, love will finish its work of making all things new. And both faith and hope, by the way, are done despite much apparent evidence to the contrary. Think of faith and hope as distinct components of the same action. Faith is putting one foot in front of the other. Hope is looking up ahead as you do. Love is the path you are walking on and the horizon towards which you walk. 7, loves others. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, but do not have love, I am nothing. Love must be for others. It cannot be for ideas or things only. You cannot love mysteries only. You cannot love knowledge only. You cannot love belief only or comfort. You cannot love your neato talents. You cannot love whatever it is that makes you better than someone else. You cannot love only the actions of giving and sacrifice. You can only admire them. Love must be for others. Love has no others, no them. They're all mine. 8, all in all. Love never fails. As love ages, it becomes less and less discriminate, less and less boundaried. This is the greatest challenge of Jesus, and the reason why we need him, why we most need him. Anyone can love their mother when she holds them. Anyone can love their girlfriend amid fireflies at twilight. Anyone can love their child when they're curled up on your lap like a sleepy puppy. But what about when things fall apart? What about when the mother leaves or the summer romance becomes a bored marriage? What about when the child defies absolutely everything about you? What about when the secret is kept? What about when they were never your family or your friends in the first place? What about the awkward strangers? What about the annoying other that you think CCF would be better off without? What about depraved, unregenerate enemies? The truth is that the love of Jesus is and always has been indiscriminate and unboundaried. It just takes us time to wake up to it. But if it is to be the love of God, and if it is to be for me, then it has to be for all. It has to be for the ugly as well as the beautiful, the poor as well as the rich, the clumsy as well as the cool, the oppressor as well as the oppressed, the wicked as well as the righteous. And it is. Love is not particularly special. It is everywhere. And everyone agrees love is good. The offense of the love of Jesus isn't what it is, it's for whom and at what cost. Because the truth is that the love of Jesus is always costly and for the wrong person. It just takes us time to wake up to that. When we are children, we love like children, taking, held up like a sack of potatoes on our mother after church. When we grow up and become parents, we realize how backbreaking that is. When we are young lovers, we love as young lovers do, brimming over with delight and desire. When we later learn how to hurt one another, we realize how much mercy costs. We learn how much God's love requires. And as we do, we learn just how much we are filled up by it. We think it will end us, like a laser beam heating up a balloon until it pops. But it is actually like light passing through crystal. It isn't absorbed, it's refracted. It becomes more, not less. 9, benediction. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I have been fully known. I used to be afraid. How do I know that I really know God? Then I learned I don't, and I won't for now. No need to be afraid. What is sure is that while I know very little, I have always been fully known and loved. Thanks be to God. Let's pray. All you need is love. Love is all we have left. God is love. The last straw or the ultimate truth, Lord? I'll go with the ultimate truth. Help us to become people of love, real love. Help us to become people who acknowledge that we know in part and who revel in that we are fully known. Amen.